You are listening to the Frilla Bros Tech Podcast, episode 258. What do Samsung, Google, and SpaceX have in common?
Season 6, episode 258 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is September the 4th, 2016. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and having stolen fizzy lifting drink, bumped into the ceiling, which now has to be washed and sterilized, so he gets nothing, is my brother, James Furlough. Good day, sir.
Nice.
Said good day.
Well, I'm going to have to give you the gum back, the everlasting gobstopper, because believe it or not, I'm starting a week-long water fast tomorrow.
You are not going to eat anything for a week.
For 7 entire days, yes.
You should feel good next week.
Oh, yeah. I'll be top of the game. I'll be like, what are we talking about? I'll just be asleep at the keyboard, probably.
Well, this is going to be... Okay, that's interesting, because I'm going to be in England.
Oh, all right.
We'll have to negotiate this carefully. It's going to be... Next week's going to be awesome. We're liable to say anything. I'll be exhausted, and you'll be exhausted.
Famished.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll just be hangry the entire show.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. I've heard, having never done... I've done a couple day fasts before, but I've heard that day 3.5 is where you hit the real pit of despair in your hunger. And then day 4 and 5, all of a sudden you just kind of accept it. I was like, okay, I'm hungry. I'm like, I'm hungry, but it's fine. And then, so day 6 and 7 become, you're kind of like, you just go and it almost starts to feel normal. Like your biological defense mechanisms take over and you don't mind it anymore. It's fine. We're starving. And then you eat the first thing you've eaten and your body just does not do well.
Yeah, it's, so your body essentially it enters a state of ketosis those many days in. And so when that happens, it's now burning fat essentially.
Yeah.
And so you're hungry, but you're not like dying anymore. Mm-hmm. But the problem that a lot of people run into when they're starting to fast is that they're like nowhere near any state of ketosis when they start. And because essentially you can reach that state of ketosis by eating a lot of protein and fat.
Yeah.
And your body just will naturally start to go into that direction. But most people are like, so I had a soda and some carbs and, you know, yeah. and they eat a ton. And so their body is in a totally different state. And then it jumps to another. So like, for example, today I'm avoiding all carbs and sugars. And so kind of getting my body ready for it. I'm still going to be miserable. I should have started like 3 days ago.
I was going to say, this sounds like just you trying to pump yourself up for, you know what this reminds me of? Last week before the marathon, where I was standing there, like the morning of, I was like, or the night before, I felt good. Like, I'm going to feel like this is good. I'm fine with this.
Yeah.
I'm okay with this. I was nervous, like that kind of like carnal nervousness that you can't get over,
right?
Or primal nervousness. But like, but just the logic part of me was like, no, I've trained for this. I'm fine. This is good. I'm talking myself up and like, no, I've done this. So I'm ready. And then you actually get there the next morning and you're like, I'm not sure that's true.
Which, congratulations, by the way, for finishing your marathon.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You going to do another one? Are you pumped? Are you like, this is my new life?
You know, it's funny. It took about an hour and a half before the next marathon was brought up by somebody else.
Yes.
And I was just like, oh, one of my friends came up, and she's a marathoner, and she really liked the venue and stuff. And she was like, "I could see doing this next year. I want to do this again next year." And I was like, "What? I just threw up all over a tree like 40 minutes ago. Like, let me just come down a little bit before I start thinking about next year."
Nice.
Yeah, it was.
So you do it next year?
Yeah, right. No, I don't know. We'll see. And there are some other circumstances that might play into whether I do it or not.
Wow, that was really vague. Do you want to elaborate on circumstances?
Yeah, I'm working on. I'm just working on getting a new job.
Oh, okay.
There's a flexibility about where I'm located. So it just may not make sense to fly back to Santa Rosa for a marathon.
Okay. All right.
That's my only thought.
All right.
Which is...
I was hoping it was better than that.
No. Yeah, that's why it was vague, because it was kind of boring.
My bad. Sorry.
That's all right.
Cool. Yeah, and Willy Wonka is no longer in charge of the factory, huh?
Yeah, it's a bummer. Happens. It's been fully transitioned to Charlie.
Yes.
I'm actually...
You're going to go... Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say, so this evening, I'm going to go watch Blazing Saddles in theaters, which I'm pretty excited about, because that's one of my top three comedies.
Really?
Yeah.
What's so funny about it? No, I'm kidding.
That is a movie that I... There are three movies that, from the moment they start to the moment they finish, I'm just giggling the entire time, and that's one of them. I'm my top three. I don't know. Have you ever gone through like the exhaustive conversation with friends about your top comedies?
No, I haven't.
Oh, jeez, it's a good time. We don't have time to do it here, but I'll give you my top three. But it's okay. Blazing Saddles, Blues Brothers, and
never seen
Super
it.
Troopers. Oh my gosh. I love
Blues Brothers Super so Troopers?
Much. Super Troopers.
Really?
I all three of those movies, just from the minute it starts on, I'm laughing at these characters and what they're doing, and they're so good. They're just so good. And I'm really excited to see Blazing Saddles. It's been like, I don't know, probably 6-7 months since I've seen it last time, so it's like just long enough where it's, you know, I'm ready. Yeah. I'm excited.
But I would say like Les Mis is probably up there for me.
Les Mis, yeah. It's got comedies.
What Lies Beneath. Oh, scary movie. Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't put much thought into it. Is Top Gun a comedy? Does that count? It's just a good movie. It's just great.
Just yeah, I think
lines,
it's,
but it's not a comedy.
Say, I think like all great action movies, it blurs the line between a comedy and an action, which is something that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has managed to do, but the DC Extended Universe has not.
No, they have not. Interesting. Okay.
But yeah, there we go. So, I don't know. We should probably get into it, because there's a lot of news this week, James, and this is the last week that we're able to talk about things other than Apple.
Seriously.
So, this week, I'd say...
Speaking of which, Jesse's phone, her on-off switch started not working today.
Yes, perfect timing.
I know. I was on the fence. I'm no longer on the fence.
It's oh my gosh. This is a week.
Just in time.
Things are turning up Apple's way. This week has been a good week for Apple. And you know the best part about it is, this has been a great week for Apple to have a bad week next week. Like,
huh.
We'll get into it. Okay. I'm excited. So, but you know what? We're not talking about the Apple announcement yet, because yes, it's literally 4 days away. And we're just going to... We'll pay heed.
Blinders on.
We're not gonna be obsessed about it the entire show. Instead, this week, like every week, we'll be talking about all sorts of different technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
Yes, I am a founder and employee of HPI. However, I do not represent HPI or any of HP's opinions. I also own part of Twitter, Etsy, and Lending Club. And I think I figured out, I don't remember the exact date, but I think I figured out when it was no longer like laughing, goofy, funny about the whole founder thing.
Right, okay.
And it was, something happened where in the middle of that whole shtick, disclosure, I got interrupted or something. And so I didn't quite finish it. And however happened, you just, the opportunity to laugh at it did not happen. And once it was like, once, done. I don't remember the week, but it happened one of the weeks. And I was like, oh,
You didn't comment on it last week, but last week I sent you, I don't even remember where, I thought I sent it via iMessages, but I texted you a link while you were giving your disclosure. It was an article that I had found earlier that week about how you don't need a co-founder. Just like, and for your startup. So
that's what that was in reference to.
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, why do I care about it? What are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
But
got it. Is. All right. That was way too subtle for me at the moment.
Yeah. Too clever by half.
Happens.
So anyways.
Too clever by half? Cool.
Yeah, that's, never mind. I'm just gonna move along. So my disclosure is I still own one share of Skull Candy, much to Robin Hood's displeasure, I'm sure, at this point. I was thinking about it. I was like, I wonder if at some point, like, somebody just takes ownership of it. Is it kind of like not paying your taxes on property, where if you don't pay your taxes long enough, the government just comes along and repossesses it? I don't know. We'll see.
No.
This is what we're discovering.
Hmm.
That's the only thing I've got to disclose. And if you want to follow me throughout the week, I am on Instagram at NextWiggin4. And I have no more shots of me running marathons or anything, because I'm done with that. But my Twitter is also at Matthew D. Furlow. And we're now being joined by Apple on the Twitterverse.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Welcome. Let's see here. JamesFurlow.com, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Snapchat, which I don't use anymore. We'll talk about that later.
All right. So there's a neutral territory for James and I, a no man's land of sorts. It's called FurlowBros.com.
No, promised land of sorts.
There we go. Sorry. it's everything that we talk about.
Jeez. This said everyone.
Everything we talk about this week, all the clicks, articles, links, videos, audios, whatever, it's all going to be there at furloughbros.com.
EOS.
Yeah. Also, anything that you would like to, or if you don't particularly want to go to furloughbros.com, that's fine. We've got a solution for you. You can go there just once and sign up for our email newsletter, where we'll deliver all that wonderful content directly to your mailbox. We also have our Patreon page linked there if you'd like to support us. What was that?
I have this cool, it's so hard not to play with. It's like a suction cup. It looks like a pig, but instead of its head, it has a suction cup. And so you stick it to the back of a device, and then it's kind of like a stand. So you can, but it's got a suction cup,
and so it pops.
It's really hard not to play with. I'm going to try hard not to.
I totally get that feeling. I got little things I play with on my desk too. But
yeah. I have no idea where we are now, but that's cool.
You're up.
All right. Speaking of devices.
Ah, yes. It's a great transition.
That are sticky. I saw this cool article in The Guardian that was how how a humble brag became a key piece of net etiquette.
Mm.
Yes. Which specifically referring to sent from my iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Which I didn't really think of it this way, but I can see it in retrospect, where if you remember correctly, when iPhones first came out, every single email you sent, they had the little foot thing that said sent from iPhone.
Right.
And in the same way that it was sent from Yahoo or Hotmail or like whatever, you know, those services, and it took off like wildfire because it had a little link to it. Well, it had that at the bottom of it, sent from iPhone, and I took mine off like right away, but some people kept it on, and right. The thinking is, it's kind of a way of showing off that, ooh, I got an iPhone.
Right.
Not necessarily saying, oh, this is a mobile message, I got to keep it brief, but more like, I got an iPhone.
Right. Well, it's, yeah. Isn't that what it was supposed to be?
Dude, I don't know. That's what apparently, it was supposed to be. I missed it. I don't know. Had I known that, I probably would have kept it around, but I was just too dense to pick up on that. And so anyways, this thing that started out as a little maybe even crass, perhaps, maybe even embarrassing, it kind of turned eventually into this thing of a blessing, really, where it was like, hey, I'm doing this on my mobile phone, so A, it's going to be short, and B, I'm not going to check my spelling.
That's and, interesting.
Yeah, and so it's turned into this thing where when it's put there, you have full permission to just blast through stuff and not worry about what it actually, what the exact content of it is. And they did a study, which I can't remember, it was researchers from the Medium and, what is it, the Sender Professionalism in Mobile, it was like Mobile Telephony. Anyways, they did a research paper on it. And what they found is that those receiving a message containing spelling and grammatical errors, they were forgiven of those mistakes when it had that sent from mobile phone. What's also interesting is that it boosted credibility over and above perfectly worded messages without the caveat.
Whoa.
Yeah. And then obviously if you had a poorly worded or incorrectly spelled message from a desktop or laptop that didn't have that, like, oh yeah, that's bad news. But it's interesting that little caveat, even with bad grammar and spelling, is received better than perfectly crafted one without that caveat. How nuts is that?
That's interesting. That is really interesting. It's funny that you bring that up because I was reading this week. When you get kind of deep into Reddit, you'll oftentimes find that it's obsessed with itself, and they'll start talking about how Reddit used to be and how Reddit is now. And one of the things that I recognized when I first joined was the idea that, like, you couldn't misspell anything. If you had an apostrophe,
oh my gosh, yes,
in it's, and it was it is, like, it didn't matter if you were President Obama with, like, the most eloquent defense of your policy that ever come. You had a spelling error, you were automatically deemed as just incapable of contributing to the conversation.
I had that happen to me, actually. I think I did like your YOUR instead of apostrophe RE or something like that. And yeah, I had someone call me out.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah, you got me. Okay, good for you.
So what's interesting? Yeah, right. Yeah, congratulations. What I think is really interesting is that nowadays, like, it's kind of, that just isn't the case anymore in Reddit, where spelling is just kind of, it's very passe. It's just not a big deal anymore. And occasionally, like, when you get really deep into arguments, people are really, you're really flustering somebody, they'll start picking apart your grammar. But I was thinking about it, at this one particular thread, people were complaining how it was a sign of how degraded Reddit had become, just full of middle schoolers, huh, and people who don't care, and it's just a lower cut of individual were on Reddit now. And I was thinking about it, and I was like, honestly, at the time, the one thing I definitely remember was how Reddit was expanding to other nationalities, and people were writing in English who didn't have that as a first language, didn't even necessarily have it as a second or third language. And a couple of highly rated comments that were like, would get started or finished with, you know, and I'm sorry, English isn't my first language. Please don't destroy me. That attitude, that cultural shift kind of took over. But I didn't even think about it until just now. That coincided with the rise of mobile Reddit and people commenting via their phone. And I think those two effects, because I've had people call me out on my phone before, and I'll just respond with, like, I was arguing about self-driving cars, and because you just have to do that sometimes online. We'll
talk about that later.
And somebody, like, they're, as part of their rebuttal to what I was saying, they were criticizing my spelling, and I just responded with, like, a, sorry, I'm on my phone, sometimes you make spelling mistakes. Yes. And then, like, then responded to them trying to be respectful, and their response was like, I'm sorry, I don't know why I was being so mean. Like, it was just a diffusing thing, but the excuse of I was on my iPhone is like a legitimate one, whereas, like, you know, it's, if I had a keyboard, like, what, how's that any less? I don't know. It is really fascinating, and I see that all over the place, this idea that, yeah, if you can say, oh, I'm sending this from my iPhone, just any level of, unless it's completely incomprehensible, you can get away with so much in the way of spelling and grammar online, or on your mobile. I mean, it's just, it's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. It's interesting the ways in which our language evolves. It's kind of weird. It's like, in some ways it becomes more flexible. And it's like, I could figure it out, so it's good enough.
Right.
And I was on a mobile device, so I get it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So, speaking of miscommunications,
it's still not fair, because we know what's coming.
So Facebook won't be communicating with Africa as they'd like to be.
Oops.
Yeah, SpaceX had a bit of a accident this
blew this their week. Top, huh?
As somebody said, every once in a while, space reminds you that it's really hard. And yeah, I don't know if you got to see the spectacular footage of the SpaceX rocket. The footage is pretty fun because you get the sound just super delayed. And it's because the rocket erupts as an explosion. Actually, I have a pretty good video of it. I'll link it here. But yeah, the eruption, like, it starts with it just exploding, and with the audio in the background, you kind of get like the crickets and stuff going on, and then all of a sudden you see it blow up, and the crickets just keep cricketing for like 30 seconds while it, or maybe it's like 10 seconds. It's fascinating. I love when you get these like really loud, really far off things. That time delay is so much fun. But yeah, so. Yeah, not good.
Was this really a relaunched one or a new one?
No, this was a new one. And the deal was I still haven't figured out if they had just done the static fire or if they were about to. But the idea is, before you launch, you want to make sure all systems are good. So you strap the rocket down and give it 100%, but it's strapped down so it doesn't take off. And then you try again later. But by this point, they had already loaded up the rocket with its payload, which was a satellite, an Iraqi, not Iraq, Israeli satellite, communication satellite, that was going to be sent into geosync orbit. And Facebook had invested a huge amount of money, like $100 million, into this satellite. And they were going to be using it to deliver internet to Africa via the internet.org. Project, and this was like the first big step in it, and it did not survive.
Yeah, so, that explosion is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular. it's really interesting to me too, because it's like, number one, the explosion occurred while they were refueling it, so they were at the time they were pumping it with hydrogen and oxygen, liquid fuel, and the explosion happens right towards the top. So there's some discussion about, like, you know, okay, whose fault is this? Because it's entirely possible at this point that it wasn't SpaceX's fault. It was faulty fueling equipment that started the explosion, and then once the explosion happens, starts, it's so violent, you can't, nothing can stop it. The other crazy part about watching it explode is just to think that, like, that explosion is the exact same thing that would have sent it out into space, just in a bit more orderly fashion, you know, like, taking it off. You know, it's, at the same time, it might be SpaceX's fault, which is going to be bad news bears, and for SpaceX, because they've had a few accidents, and that's a lot of money that's kind of, you know, that they're messing with. And if you're trying to get contracts with the United States government, if the Army, like they're in, and NASA and everything, like they're trying, if you're trying to convince satellite, you know, these really expensive satellites to be taken up, you want an unassailable launch record. And one of the things that people point out is that rockets have generally speaking, they have about a 1 in 9 failure rate. So 1 out of every 9 satellites don't make it into space, which is why they have rocket insurance. But at the same time, there are some companies that have perfect records. So that 1 in 9 isn't evenly distributed amongst everybody. And SpaceX is having more disasters than they want. And this,
while they're pushing the envelope.
Yeah, frustratingly, though, this seems like the sort of thing that's like, well, I think it'll be really interesting to see what happened, because this is something that they isn't pushing the envelope. Like, this is all standard stuff they're doing. Filling the rockets, doing a static test. Like, this isn't the hard part. When a rocket explodes because it didn't land on the barge, that's one thing. This is completely different. And it also slows them down, because this is the launch pad that they launch geosync satellites from. And now they're going to have, the pad is just destroyed in a fiery ball. But the other fascinating part of this, and I think this is really interesting, is that, so there's kind of a question of, well, you had rocket insurance, but people pointed out right away that rocket insurance technically covers the rocket and the payload during transit to space.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it wasn't during transit to space. So was the rocket insured? Was the payload insured? And if yes, by who?
It was kind of on its way to space, depending on how you define transit.
Parts of it probably made it to space. That was a pretty big explosion.
Well, even just that sense of, like, is the testing part of the trip considered or not? But,
well,
once it's, I was in the reading rocket, you'd think that it's covered, but
I'm not an expert on any of this, probably, obviously, but I was just reading different thoughts That's and ideas cool. about it. I know. And one company was arguing that it's potential that a lot of, for these really expensive pieces of equipment, that you insure it all the way along, but it's whoever is insurance is usually whoever's, like, in charge of it during that period. And so, like, for example, my company, when we ship one of our tools, we insure it, and it is insured by us up until the moment that it gets on the truck and strapped down. Then it's insured by the truck freight, and then it gets to the dock. Once the dock takes over it, now the dock insurance covers it, then the boat insurance covers it, then, like, each piece has its own insurance. Mm. And sometimes that insurance has a longer coverage than necessarily it just being on the boat. And where this gets complicated is, it's entirely possible that that satellite wasn't covered by the freight insurance, because technically it actually hadn't reached its destination yet. Which, well, so needless to say, whose fault this is going to be a really big deal, and they're going to spend a lot of money figuring that out, not because SpaceX wants to, you know, keep their keep their reputation. But the question of who, which insurance company is at, is has to cover this is going to be
yeah.
a really big question. So they're going to do tons of investigating to figure this out.
Interesting.
Because the lawyers are going to get involved, and this $2 million satellite that...
Thankfully, nobody got hurt, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
And that simplifies thankfully. Things dramatically.
But it does.
Interesting. Okay, I'm going to switch topics here.
Okay.
So, I'm sure you've heard the situation where you got some group of guys, they get together, they raise some angel funding, they make a startup, they're not making a whole lot of money, just getting started, but then they sell for like $10 million and the startup gets shut down.
Yes.
It's happened a few times. Happens like
all the time.
Yeah. There are some where they're just like, that means we're in a bubble. That's crazy. Or it's something like a naive acqui-hire or some sort of collective irrationality. They're just like, it's dumb. They're saying, there's an argument out there saying, well, maybe not.
Hmm.
Where it's like, if you're an Apple or a Google or a Microsoft or a Facebook and you want top talent, because you know that one great engineer is worth like 10 good engineers.
Right.
Like, how do you figure out who the best is? And one.
You get the GPAs.
That's what
Google did for a while.
Yeah, and they're not anymore. And probably because they're finding like, oh, it's just not a good barometer for success. And
I'm so glad about finding that.
Is that one really good barometer is, well, how good of projects do you do?
Yeah.
And how do you actually work? And the cool part about a small startup like that is they can look at your project. They can test right. it. And if you're proven, they're more than happy to shell out millions of dollars for that team. And essentially, that's what they're doing. It's startups, in a way, are replacing the resume for engineers.
And makes a lot of sense, and I've known quite a few people that's you join a startup and you start for 6 months and that gets you your next job until all of a sudden you've done two startups for a year and a half, and all of a sudden you're getting paid, you know, six figures at a car company or one of your tech companies and stuff. And even if you don't necessarily get bought out of the startup, it's just a great way to show your talent and show you're willing to sacrifice for the team and whatever. Like you said, I mean, it's just you're not a really small cog in a big machine. So it's very easy to identify what each person's doing in the product, the quality of what's being delivered. And like you said, you know, if a lot of these guys, it just shows what they're capable of.
Yeah, totally. So this is an interesting thing. So next time you see that or hear that, we'll have to think about it in those terms, potentially.
That's really, that's fascinating. Well, that actually is a really convenient segue, James, because there's a big question about, there was an article that I read this week. It was basically asking, what's going on at Google right now?
Google.
And this comes at the, this article came at the, at the tail end of the week, where earlier they canceled the Project Aura modular phone. So if you remember, this was the device where you'd have like the body, and then originally it was pitched as you just have this like thin body, and then you'd clip in all the different components. The screen could be swappable, cameras, microphones, processors, each component could be swapped in and out.
And this is the one that earlier this year they announced partnership programs and expanding it and like we're all in.
Google I.O., yeah, they were like, yeah, we've got a plan for it. Yeah, excuse me. We're going to be doing something awesome.
A little summer cleaning, huh?
Yeah, and so that one they just announced. They said they might be opening to licensing the technology because they do a lot of engineering, but they're done with the project. They're not going to be pursuing it anymore.
It's not going anywhere.
Yeah. Then at the same time,
I mean, let's be honest. Google, with all of their money and willingness to do crazy stuff, if they're like, man, it's not good enough for us, like, who else is gonna be like, you know what, Google's full of garbage, I'm doing it. Like, well, nobody.
Yeah, well, okay, so you say nobody, but like, yeah, Motorola, say nobody. Motorola is doing exactly that right now. They have modular components, and they're, in particular, honestly, one of the things that's the coolest part of what they were doing was how the little different components would lock into place. They had these like magnets that they could energize and de-energize and programmatically. It seemed pretty cool. There are pieces of the technology.
Wait, is this Motorola or Google?
No. Google is doing the cool connection thing.
And that's so Motorola thing. Could adopt that for
the right.
Phone. That's what you think. So maybe not create an Aria phone, but use some of the cool
right.
technology.
Okay. Exactly. There was a lot of engineering and development that was done that I think is licensable to other smartphones and other industries outside of smartphones. And I think that's what you'll see more than anything else. And then this was kind of Fortune reported earlier this week that Google will be absorbing Nest developers. Obviously, Google owns Nest, so it's not like it's a giant shift, but they're basically...
I am so happy I didn't get a Nest thermostat.
They fired so the main Nest guy. That Nest had their like...
Fidel. Whole
just, yeah, they had just a couple of really dumb things leading up to Fidel getting fired. They're now taking all of the Nest, like the best Nest engineers, and making them Google engineers working for Google proper, which is leaving the rest of Nest as just sort of something. And my comment on this is clearly the end of Nest is nigh.
Yeah, they're gonna they're gonna milk that cow for what it's worth and call it good.
Right.
Move on. And, wow, yeah. And did you hear too that Google X is having kind of a little like mini shakeup? It's getting bogged down, and people are really getting frustrated with the lack of any progress there as well.
Yeah, well, so this article, The Verge, I thought did a really good job of kind of summing up everything that's been going on.
Sweet.
Very bad, no good summer. So in October, at the end of August, they announced that the fiber team was under serious pressure to cut costs. They're having a hard time getting to cities.
Wow.
And yeah, they're considering switching to a wireless infrastructure. So Google Fiber is kind of coming winding down. Obviously, we just went over Nest, their whole deal. The self-driving cars on August 6th, the public face, the Google self-driving car project, Chris Urmson left along with two other executives. And it also, Uber acquired that autonomous truck company, which was all ex-Googlers.
We're going to talk more about this later, but yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
The Alphabet's X division, which you were just talking about. The Moonshot factory under AstroTeller is sputtering and having a difficult time getting products out the door amidst internal politics.
Yeah.
Boston Dynamics, they're still in the process of trying to figure out how to offload Boston Dynamics. You know, and the question there is, well, are they not trying to offload them anymore because they haven't sold them, or are they just, is there just no buyers? Project Aura, we just went over that. That's going down. They just announced that the Chromebook Pixel was the flagship Chromebook. It was going to be awesome. And yeah, they just announced, they unceremoniously end of life it earlier this week.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Announced, yeah. And they, there is a rumor that the name Pixel will continue on and that will be replacing the Nexus program, which is also coming to an end. Now, that might just be a naming convention thing where they're ending the Nexus program and they're making it a more Google-centered. Like, so one of the rumors was that it would just be branded with a giant Google G as opposed to Nexus. It might get rebranded as Pixel. People aren't sure. It's kind of... there's big changes there as they're moving forward. That's not a brand that they're continuing with in the trajectory they're going on, either of them. Then there is Allo, which was their new chat app, and it was going to be like, we were talking about how, what is Google's chat app strategy right now. It doesn't make any sense between like Hangouts is doing one thing and they just got all these different strategies and it doesn't make any sense. Well, they promised that Allo would be here by the end of the summer. It sure feels like the end of the summer and Allo is not here.
Yeah, I was like, we talked about getting our hands on their Alexa competitor thing.
Yeah.
And not yet.
Yeah, and it's like the Daydream phones, they do seem to be coming, but yeah, there is just not a lot. There's something going on at Google, and I'm not sure if this is just a spring cleaning sort of thing where they're shaking everything up and moving on, and they're just doing it in the middle of summer instead of spring. But they're having kind of a rough summer.
Yeah, it feels like there's something bigger going on.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's this weird phenomenon where it's almost like back in like 2010, 2012, areas like that, times like that, they got the best of the best.
Yeah.
Like comes back to that whole idea of they were hiring great engineers who were doing 10x the amount of work as good engineers. And so they were able to say like, we can do self-driving cars and we can do robotics and we can do Aria phones and we can create Chromebook pixels and we can do all these different things and we've got great engineers to help us do it. And it's like in the last, man, it only feels like in the last 6 years or so, the great engineers, they're still going to Google, but they're also getting spread out to Facebook and spread out to Uber and spread out to Amazon and for some things. And obviously Apple's always been taking some as well. I would imagine even Microsoft is today filtering off a few more than they were 10 years ago. Yeah. And so as a result, they've got a bunch of good engineers intermixed with the great engineers. And it's almost like, oh, we can't do everything we thought we could anymore. We have to pare it down to our current skill set. They're regressing to the mean, if you will.
Right.
And which is normal, but it's also, man, they're so upfront and transparent about this stuff. Because I've got to imagine that there's been a bazillion things that, well, I bet you Amazon's list is four times this long. But they don't talk about it, so we just tell them no. And I bet there's a bunch of things within Facebook and within Apple, and maybe not within Uber, but these other companies were like, yeah, they're killing stuff all the time. But, man, Google talks about it.
I also get the feeling that Google goes further down the road of allowing their engineers and their product guys teams build an actual product before they step back and say, oh, we should probably cancel this. Because I think, you know, like Apple, yeah, they're constantly poking and prodding and doing,
you know, they were playing around with the TV and never saw the light of day.
Exactly. And not only do they not talk about it, but they don't let consumers ever see it. There's not these product lines that they kill quickly. Whereas that's always been the big frustration with the spring cleaning has been that they tend to be products that aren't growing at the right rate. They're not happening, and the technology makes sense somewhere else, and the talent makes sense somewhere else. So Google shuts down this product that people use as part of their workflow and just end it. Like, you're like, what is going on? What am I supposed to do with this? And I get the feeling that at least with the whole spring cleaning thing, it was like predictable every year about this time. You'd start to get nervous and start thinking about your favorite feature that you've been using on Google that none of your other friends use and just think, oh no, it's coming.
I'm not talking about shutting down all these, just to be clear. Some of them are just genuinely like, man, this is tough. Like the self-driving cars, they clearly still want to do that. They're just losing people left and right. Part of it's because it's probably taking a lot longer than they thought. It's 10 times slower now.
like you say, I guess that's why this feels like this list feels worse than spring cleaning as well, is because it's not Google deciding, hey, this is a project that's not heading at the rate that we want, so we're going to take control of it and break it into its simpler components, whether that's the employees working on it or the technology they're using, and put it somewhere else that makes sense. It's like the self-driving car thing. Like, it legitimately feels like they're not making the progress they want, and a big part of that is because they don't have control of the engineers that are the best suited for this. Like, Tesla's taking too many of their engineers. Uber's taking too many of their engineers. Facebook's taking too many of the engineers that Google wants and needs to make self-driving cars a successful platform. And whether that's management's fault, whether that's money fault, whether, like, whoever's fault that is, isn't necessarily important. The point is that they don't have the talent to get it done at this point. And it feels like that's the entire thing going on with the X Division right now, is that all that moonshot stuff, it's not taken off, and they're not doing anything with it. And like Fiber, how is that Google's fault? They're going up against some of the most powerful monopolies on Earth. And legally protected monopolies trying to break into those markets. Yeah, it's hard. And, you know, Comcast and Warner and everybody else that's in that market is trying really hard to slow them down. And is it Google's fault? Should we blame Google for not understanding what they were embarking on when they did that? Like, not really counting the cost ahead of time? Because they didn't. They just kind of said, oh, let's try this out, see what happens. And now that they've really taken an account of how much it's going to cost to fight city by city all of these giant companies to break into the monopolies, they're like, well, it's not really worth it. It's not a big enough business. And, you know, I look at that stuff and I'm just like, this is so much of this just feels like, it's not like Google has assessed these products in these categories and said, hey, it's not worth it. We're going to say no to this because this isn't what we're good at, or it doesn't help us or whatever. It feels like they want to say yes to these things, but they're being told no. And which is a different thing. Know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Now, what's actually pretty interesting, and I think actually dovetails in with the driving car stuff, is Google is not the only place that Uber's been poaching people from for their self-driving effort. So, how about this for pretty mean? At Carnegie Mellon, they have a robotics lab, the NREC, and it's considered like one of the best self-driving car labs out there. And Uber CEO, Travis Kalanick, he worked really hard with them to forge a partnership with the university to work on autonomous cars. And once they got it, they set up shop less than a mile away. And 40 of the lab's 100 scientists, including the director, now work for Uber.
Oh.
They gutted it. Let the wolf into the sheep den, and they gutted it.
40 of the 100. That's got to be brutal. And I've been, that happened in my school. We had a stellar computer scientist engineer, one professor who got poached by the CAA, I think it was. Might have been the NSA. But it was just like devastating, because they were like, there are students that come to this school specifically for that professor. Like, and you just took them from us. I can't imagine having somebody do 40 of your top engineer, your top scientists.
So bad.
That's brutal.
So they did an interview with the new director. And like, so how's it going? Because it's been about a year now. And
it's fine.
Yeah, and he was like, look, we're back up to like 115 people. We're making it work. It's like, if anything, it was kind of nice because a bunch of people didn't really know what we were doing. And when that news came out, a bunch of people were like, really? You do that? I'm interested. So it's like, so it's okay. We actually have new partnerships.
Talk about a silver lining.
Yeah, you got to
make the best of the situation. Jeez.
Yeah, he said, like, they're asking, like, well, what happened to your projects? And he was like, well, it was a mix. There were some of them, yeah, we had to stop and shut them down just because we only had two people left on a team of 10. And he's like, but there were others that were the opposite, and we're making it work. Their biggest customer, which is the Department of Defense, they said, we're all good there. We didn't lose anything except for maybe two projects. Yes, I love that you asked them the question, like, what's something exciting coming out of the lab? And they're like, of course, we can't talk about anything real. But I thought this was interesting. He said that not too long ago, they finished a project on a fully autonomous six-wheeled vehicle that's carried in a sling under a fully autonomous Black Hawk helicopter. So we can autonomously fly this thing in. It then drives around on its own to, like, do surveys and whatever stuff. They're also focusing a lot. Cool, right?
Yeah, that's really awesome. I like it a lot.
Yeah. They're also big in the agricultural space, trying to figure out. They're working with John Deere to try to figure out how to come up with semi-autonomous robotics for farming. Which I'm like, that's a great use, actually. Good idea.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I thought this was interesting. So what?
So it's kind of unfortunate that I don't really want to live in Pennsylvania, because that sounds like fun.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting. They were like, so, like, what do you think about Uber? What they're doing at. I thought it was interesting. He goes, look, their objectives are different than ours. Okay? They're in it to make money. And so he says, a lot of the stuff that they talk about, he's like, it's just marketing stuff. They're like, so they announced we've got these driverless cars driving down the road. But he's like, but there's still engineers in the car. It's like, that's not really autonomous, is it? And he's like, for them, the focus is fully technical work. And they've, you know, they're working on stuff. And he's like, so we're keeping going. He did say, and I thought this was interesting, and it dovetails with another article that I read. He was like, look, it's just not there yet. Driverless cars, yeah, we're 80% of the way there. But, man, that last 20% is kind of where it's at. And he's like, and we're just scratching the surface on the 20%. It's incredibly difficult. And at the same time, Vox did a fairly informal poll where they asked people, so are you ready for driverless cars? Like, are you super excited for it? And do you think it's a thing? And what they found was a couple things that are not surprising. But only 32% of the people believe that self-driving cars will improve the driving experience, compared to 48 who don't think it will.
Wait, say it one more time?
Yeah, okay. So, 32% believe that self-driving cars will improve the driving experience. Only about a third of the people. Whereas half the people do not think it will improve the driving experience. And the other two-thirds, I can't do that math. The remaining part, don't think at all. But anyways,
they don't think anything. Yeah. It'll be about the same.
They just don't think at all. Whatever. It's the same. There's also obviously massive age gaps or age related differences, if that makes sense. Let's see here. 35% of Americans agree that self-driving cars will reduce accidents with auto-related fatalities. However, 46% predict that self-driving cars will not reduce accidents and fatalities. So the majority of people think that self-driving cars are not going to improve things.
You know what I love about this? This, it just seems so obvious to me that this is a case of
perception's reality.
Well, yeah, exactly, because it's and it's fine. Like, I honestly think it is 100% fine that people feel this way. I, generally speaking, with the exception of the trolley problem that we've talked about on the show before.
No,
the
whole, we didn't talk about that on the show.
We didn't talk about it on the show?
No, you run your marathon.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We talked about it during the marathon. It felt like the show. So the trolley problem is the – this is hilarious – is that if you're on a train, you're standing next to a train track, there's a train coming. There's a fork in the train track. If the train keeps going straight forward, it's going to hit six people and kill them all. If you switch tracks, kill though –
them, I think is how it went.
No, it'll kill all six.
What are you talking about? Okay.
You the trolley problem. And then if you switch the tracks – It'll go to the other side, and then it'll hit the one person. There's one on the other one. There's one person, so you're in action. You not getting involved. Six people die. You get involved. You can save six people, but you will kill another person. Which should you make? And that's described as the trolley problem. And I think it is ridiculous hypothetical for self-driving cars. I just think it's it so misses the point on so many different levels that, and maybe if people really want to hear this, please like comment or something, because I'll go into why I think it, like I've actually like written stuff before, like talking about how these are the reasons why this is a ridiculous hypothetical. That, but outside of that, I don't try to convince people generally that, like, oh no, you're wrong, self-driving cars are great, because the great part about self-driving cars is the truth about them will become self-evident as they hit the roads. Like, you just, a person will just sit in their car and it'll take over autopilot, and it'll just sort of happen. It'll be built into more and more cars automatically. The self-braking for safety reasons will just be built into cars. Like, there are more and more features that people like, these automation features of rear cameras or like self, you know, cars that can parallel park on their own. All those different features are the elements that are coming together, and people like them, and they think, oh, these are great. I think this is a great feature. And yet you ask those same people, well, do you want a self-driving car? And they'll be like, well, no, that seems like a bad, I don't want to put the computer in charge of that much. And you're like, it's just laughable, because A, you do, you just don't know it yet. What you want is a highly stable computer involved. And I was actually thinking about this earlier today, the idea that I'm the sort of person that kind of enjoys adding tremendous complexity to my life in order to save a little convenience. For example,
yeah,
my Hue light bulbs. I acknowledge that it is a sliver of convenience that I'm giving myself, and I'm adding a lot of complexity. And in the sum total, I'm only saving myself like a little bit to do this, but this is the first generation. Like, I'm going to figure out how to automate more of this process. Other engineers are going to figure out how to automate more of this process. And as time goes on, it'll get to the point where the cost of these light bulbs will be so cheap. It's what you buy at the cheapest ones. And that convenience that comes along with them won't introduce any great complexity into your life, into most people's lives, and they'll integrate it. It's the reason why we all have smartphones, because they didn't add huge complexity while really increasing our convenience. And that's exactly what, like, Google self-driving cars will do. They won't add any dramatic complexity while increasing the convenience, and people will get into that just like they get into the Tesla's autopilot stuff. Or, like, there's a reason why every luxury car has some form of autopilot at this point, whether it's lane tracking or assisted braking or all those different features, because those features are what people want when they're secure. They don't add dramatic complexity, but they add convenience. I sit there and I go, like, the logical conclusion of that is everybody's in a self-driving car. What people don't want, and I think this is completely reasonable, is they don't want in a government organization to come in and just say, nobody can drive anymore. Everybody off the road. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And And I just don't think that that is at all what's going to happen. I think what you'll see first is the diamond lanes in California will become self-driving lanes in California. And
though, how about this? Experts disagree on how self-driving cars will affect traffic. Some predict it'll improve traffic by allowing cars to use the roads more efficiently and enable more carpooling. But others predict that if commuting becomes more pleasant, more people will want to commute, and the crowds become even more crowded, or the roads become even more crowded.
What?
Time will tell.
You say, so, well, that's you.
Maybe you're diamond lane. Maybe they add another criteria. It's got to be a driverless commuter.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, and that's, but the point is that you will at some point, I think in 20 years, see roads or stretches of roads or portions of highways that are, no, you have to let the machine take over because these cars drive so much faster than a person. A person can't possibly keep up, or it's just so inconvenient because CGP Gray. Jeez Louise. It's a YouTube channel, and his latest video is on driving what causes traffic, and then he inevitably gets to the way to fix this isn't for people to drive better, it's to get self-driving cars. I just sit there and I go, it's fine. Don't like it. It doesn't matter. You're eventually going to have a car that has it included. You're not going to be legally required to use it. You're just going to use it one day because it's a new feature. And you're going to say, hey, this is pretty nice. And in 30 years, nobody will drive. Period. And people who want to drive, people who want that experience, will just go to a track and like drive for fun. Like I
don't know, man. Right now, only a slight majority of adults under 30 are actually excited about self-driving cars. 40% are worried.
You want?
And, I guess they're not self-driving cars today.
And in 1990, how many adults thought the internet was going to be a big deal? How many adults today? If you would have interviewed them about the internet and what they thought they were going to spend, how much of your life do you think you'll spend on the internet? How much of your money do you think you'll spend on the internet? How much of whatever?
Yeah, there was a time when people were afraid to pay through the internet.
Exactly, and now the biggest retailers are all online.
Boom. I think it's just we're good.
You say it's a ridiculous premise. I think it's interesting.
All right.
But the best part about it is you don't have to lobby against it. You don't have to correct people. They'll just be wrong and discover it on their own. Yeah. Okay. So, did you follow this year's IFC? What was that thing this year?
Oh yeah, of course. Who doesn't? You know, I mean,
I know. It was a big international conference with mobile providers and stuff, and I don't know. It's not in America, so it's not that exciting. Yeah, no, there are these trade shows all the time, and there was another big one, a huge one this week, and a bunch of new phones and things were announced, but there is one product that did seem to kind of raise up to the level of everybody paying attention, which was kind of cool, and it's Lenovo's new yoga book. Lenovo's yoga line, those are their, like...
You know what, I just got that.
Laptops that could... What?
I just got that. I was reading it earlier and was like, yoga. Huh. I wonder why, like, is like a baseball reference or... I don't know. I got it. I don't know. I'm slow. Sorry.
That's really funny. Yeah. So their yoga line of laptops were laptops that could fold and like fold back on themselves and they had kind of a cool hinge. They seem fine. People like them. But they just announced a new tablet and that they've been working on for a really long time. And it's kind of unique. It's kind of cool. The device has... They're pitching it as a tablet, but it's kind of like a book. Where it's got the folding hinge that can fold back on itself. You got a touchscreen Android tablet on one side. But on the other side, instead of a touchscreen tablet. They are using the Wacom stylus and the Wacom stylus technology, which is your like your expensive artist tech.
Yeah,
for drawing on a stylus and stuff. They're using that to do digital input. It also can turn on a keyboard so you can type on it, and it's all touch sensitive, obviously, so it allows for all sorts of interaction as kind of a multi-purpose keyboard stylus thing. They've got different features on it that use the Wacom technology. For example, like you can put a notepad on it, like actual paper, right on the paper in pen, and the tablet will just read that information as you're writing it and use and write it into a digital form automatically, which is kind of cool. Obviously, you can draw on it, do art on it. That's one of the big things they're pitching with it. They said the keyboard can take a little bit of time to get used to, actually. It's not you sit down and it's immediately like a normal keyboard, because it's obviously a touch keyboard.
Yeah.
But they're talking about how after some use, it actually becomes pretty intuitive and pretty nice to use. But I thought this was kind of cool.
Huh.
It makes me want to play around with something like this.
Yeah, that is cool. Well, do they have a price? $500?
Yes. It's for the Android Marshmallow version, it'll be $499, and for the Windows 10 version, it'll be $549.
That's reasonable.
Pretty reasonable. It comes with a stylus pen included. They also have LTE radios. Lenovo rates the Android version at 15 hours and the Windows at 13 hours, which is quite a bit of battery life.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. So, seems pretty nice. 4 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of storage. I mean, it's a mid-range tablet as far as tablets go, but it's got this cool feature, and I like that, because I think if it's pretty clear at this point that if you're just talking like tablets, Apple's still just cleaning up the market on the sheet of glass form factor. They're doing quite well, and so in order to kind of find any room, you have to start for Android especially, you have to start reaching out into these other use cases, and I think this is pretty neat. If I had a $500 lying around, well, I'd probably buy a VR headset, but
after that, for your second $500
lying around, this sort of thing, I could see getting into this.
It does look cool. I like it. It was funny, like my mom came up and visited, and we were showing her Jesse's iPad, which is the 12.9 one. It's huge. And my mom was like, oh my gosh, with something like this, you don't need a laptop anymore. This is a full replacement. I was like, no. And because there's just doing creative work is still very difficult to do on that. Awesome for consumption. Awesome.
That's interesting that doing creative work is still a challenge, because it's basically what we were, that the article we started out with about how, writing on the sent from my iPhone is an excuse to say, look, this isn't going to be my highest quality work.
Right.
And it's interesting that is still a problem, even with the quote unquote pro device.
Now for certain things like drawing. Okay. It's ridiculously awesome. And that's nice.
Yeah.
But for little things like typing and even just multitasking some stuff, like, no, it's a pain. It's like earlier we had a power outage or something. I don't know what happened. But so my computer had to restart, and I didn't realize it before the show, and I kind of, to get it to work again, you kind of got to turn it on, officially close everything, and then just restart the machine and just whatever. I have an older machine, I guess. Anyways, since I was waiting, I was like, all right, I'm going to do this on my iPad. So I had the split screen, I had the docs open on one, I had my browser open in the other, and it was doing the links back and forth. And it was still a pain. Total pain.
Yeah. Interesting.
And I was just like, I was like, well, I'm just sitting around waiting for my computer to turn back on, so what the heck, I'll go. And it was in that 5-ish minutes, I think I got like 1.5 articles. And then once that was up, I think I did like 10 in, she's like so much faster. Now part of it, I've practiced a little bit.
Yeah.
And I know the shortcuts, and so there's that. And so there's questions about like, well, for Eleanor, maybe an iPad, if she spends more time with it, she'll just be more comfortable than with a mouse, though.
Right.
And that mouse is pretty darn nice. And so I look at some of these tablets, and it's like, okay, you know, if you can genuinely, maybe something where it's like, yeah, it's mostly a laptop that you can fold the keyboard back, and it's really crazy thin, so you don't have to worry about it. But when I want to type and I want to multitask and do normal computer stuff, it would let me. And then if I want to just look at, you know, YouTube or Facebook or whatever, and I want to do it full screen and I can rotate it to be landscape if I wanted to, I don't know, maybe that's compelling.
Yeah.
And would work pretty well.
It's interesting that you bring this up, because Diana actually shared an article with me earlier this week, and where they were talking about, what was it called? The idea of, they're doing a study that people reading news on mobile phones tend to not remember as much and not know as much about news. And having your mobile phone as your news source for a lot of people tends to be kind of gives you this false sense of how much you actually know about the news. And they're just people who consume all of their news on a mobile phone are less informed in general.
Dude, that's just because they're just reading headlines, and that's all they have time for. They're not actually reading articles.
I agree with you on that, but I thought it was really interesting because as I was reading it, I was thinking about the fact that, you know, I really don't read articles on my phone. I try to avoid, for this show, it as much as possible. I only do it on the fringes, like, if I know I'm, like, I did yesterday because I drove up to Tahoe and back the same day, and I was just wanting to make sure I didn't miss anything. But I spent, like, 2 hours on Friday reading all the articles at my computer just so I know, okay, make sure I get everything done. Because I can Google things really quickly. It's easy to copy and paste. I do more research. I spend more time reading. Like, there's a holistic process that's not conducive on a mobile device, even on a tablet. And you can do with a computer.
But maybe something like this yoga, when you're ready to do the multitasking, you flip the keyboard over, you're in work mode, and then you just want to sit back and relax, you flip it back to the other side and you relax. I don't know, maybe that's the way to go.
Let's try it. Somebody give me $2,000 so I can spend the last $500 on a yoga book. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
You know what you're not going to be able to take notes on, though, James?
No, what?
Your Samsung Galaxy 7.
Oh.
Note 7. Ooh, yeah. Hey, before I get too far into this, when did we start? I don't know.
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock?
Halfway.
Okay, cool. Good.
Right? Because we did 3?
Yeah.
Okay.
This one could, I feel like this could become a conversation. So this week, Samsung Friday, for people who don't follow this sort of how news cycles work, the Friday before a long weekend is always a great week for what they call the dumping grounds. Basically, most major news markets kind of go dark for the weekend, and because everybody's going to go on barbecue. So if you got bad news and you don't want the news to make a big deal about it, you publish it on the Friday before a long weekend. So the FBI released all of the notes on Hillary Clinton's investigation, for example, but also Samsung announced that they're going to do a global recall of their flagship phone, the Galaxy Note 7.
What happened?
And they're only doing that because occasionally they explode in your pocket. Oh. Yeah, it's like 24 out of every million. So, not huge odds, but you know, worse odds than you want. it's just especially complicated seeing how, like, they want to sell tens of millions of them. So, those numbers start to add up relatively quickly. And I don't know if you've ever seen a lithium-ion battery explode, but it's not entirely unreminiscent of the SpaceX explosion. I mean, it is. It's pretty violent. They're not like a... They don't go pop. They eject jets of flames and torch devices. So, yeah, this is a pretty big deal for Samsung. And the worst part about it is Samsung, they seem to be trying to get a hold of this situation as fast as possible. A, you know, putting the news out when they want to, so they hit the weekend right before Labor Day. But also, they don't want the U.S. government getting involved in controlling the recall, which the U.S. government's not really thrilled about. And so they're already talking about how, you know, they need to go through a more, you know, one of our more traditional department routes to kind of handle this recall and stuff.
Oh.
So this is going to be a pretty big mess. And it's a full recall. So you bring your phone in and they will give you a new one, or they'll give you money for a different one. Wow. I mean, it's, yeah.
They're going to lose a lot of money on this.
They're going to lose a tremendous amount of money. And I think what really blows my mind is that the timing could not have been more perfect. It's almost as though Apple planned this.
Because
Apple is going to announce the new iPhone 7 on Wednesday. And so
are you
Apple,
getting it?
Me?
Yeah.
Nah.
You going to get a new Samsung? Galaxy
probably
Note
not.
7?
I don't particularly like keeping bombs in my pocket. So
yeah, they fixed the problem. Anyone you buy now is fine.
Sure, that's what I'm going
to
believe.
That's what they want you to believe, yeah.
Exactly. No, so the iPhone 7. Do you want to talk about it? What do you think they're going to do on?
Not at all.
I want to say.
No.
Really?
Oh, I think they'll do new phones. I've been trying hard not to pay attention because I like a little bit of the surprise.
Aww. But we're in the predicting game. We've got to predict stuff, James.
You're no fun. the pressure-sensitive home button seems like a thing. I mean, all accounts, it sounds like minor little changes. They're saving a big one for next year. What's the reason again? It's the 10-year anniversary.
Yeah, 10-year anniversary, man. That's a big deal.
Sounds like a dumb reason. But
it's a dumb reason.
Anyways, yeah, I will probably get on that bandwagon. The real question for us is, are we going to get in on their $40 a month, which I know that's not what it'll be for us, pay for the phone plan, or do we just shell out major dollars and I don't know. I'm kind of questioning AT&T, so all of my decisions are around it. It's kind of assumed it's happening at this point.
It's pretty exciting.
Yeah. It sounds like new computers of some sort, like MacBooks Pros.
No way. We're not going to get new MacBooks tomorrow.
I think that's going to be an October thing.
October, yeah.
Well, I know there's not new iPads because they just did that in March.
I think we'll get a new watch. I think we'll get a new watch and a new iPhone.
Oh my gosh. And I hope they have some awesome bundle where you can buy them together. And I will love it.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is what I think is going to happen. This is the lineup. But we'll start with the watch because that's the easiest. They're going to save the same basic form factor, but they're going to add GPS.
Why? What's the big deal about that?
You can run without your phone.
Oh. Okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah, that's it. And it really and truly it just brings up to par with It's the only feature that, as a health tracker, the Apple Watch doesn't have that's as good as everybody else.
Okay.
You know, then that's becoming more and more kind of a necessary feature. So, yeah, they're getting on that bandwagon. For me, it's not that big of a deal because I like having my phone with me, so I don't mind.
Yeah, you make phone calls and stuff while running.
Exactly. I get bored, man. I run for a really long time, and I run really slow, so I can still talk. I like talking to major marathoners who run really fast, and I'll explain I get bored, so I call people. They're like, "What? How is that even possible?" I was like, "Oh, just don't run that fast.
It's easy.
Stay slow, man." But so I I think, but I can see why that's a big selling point for a lot of other people. Especially if you look at this as a health tracker thing, but I don't think we're going to see anything really surprising. I don't think we're going to get LTE. I don't think we're going to get a new
watch bands, colors, stuff.
Yeah, of course.
Battery life, form factor.
They're going to only improve battery life as much as they need to keep up with whatever new technology they're adding. Okay. You know, you'll get a performance boost, but they're still going to keep it to a charge it every night sort of deal.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I think it'll be like thinner, maybe?
No, I bet it's the same form. I'll bet they keep the same basic body.
Okay.
And then, so then you obviously the iPhone 7 becomes the next big thing. And I, like you said, how it looks category, it'll basically look the same. They'll get rid of the headphone jack.
I'm pumped about the dual lens.
They're going to have the dual lens. And that to me is going to be like, I think that's going to be the big deal. And I think it's a big deal.
And it should be. Now, will that enable them to do like 3D stuff?
Augmented reality?
Yeah.
Yeah, theoretically. A lot of times you can't do that. You can't do 3D, like you can't make a 3D image. You can't do augmented reality because the other phones that have tried to do that, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll have like two different camera sensors. So they'll have like a 12 megapixel camera sensor for the main picture and then a 4 megapixel. And the 4 megapixel one, all it's doing is taking supplemental information. And then they use a cool algorithm to generate like field of view effects and to come up with depth information and whatnot. But it sounds like Apple's putting two 12 megapixel cameras in it. I mean, it's going to be like, it's going to be a beastly little camera module. And
that allows for like awesome zoom, right?
That's what everybody's talking about. Zoom, the light for, field.
Like, wide angle? Because that's actually, I use the wide angle lens more than anything.
I don't think so. It should, but the big one that everybody's talking about is it should give them a lot more depth information. And they've spent like a huge amount of money on AR companies in the last year to 2 years. So this is my stretch goal. I'm giving this a 65% confidence.
No way.
That you're going to have
I'm giving it a 35% confidence.
All right.
I haven't even heard it yet.
I'm guessing that there's going to be some sort of an augmented reality feature in confidence. iOS that they haven't announced
like
yet.
Like live filters, like Snapchat,
something like that.
It's going to be something as dumb as that if it's anything. Think about all the time they spent talking about Messenger in their last WWDC.
You're absolutely right. It will undoubtedly be really dumb, whatever their augmented reality feature is. What will be exciting is that they will have built the APIs into Swift and Objective-C. So you'll have these APIs for just taking information about the world into the software, and then developers can do something with that. Like, it'll be more aware. I think that's what they're going to go with. They're going to say, yeah, we're going to have a bunch of AR API so you can contextually understand the world around you. You can understand the depth of the world, and you can. And they're going to build stuff that drag and drop for developers, make it really easy to build it in. I think that's what they're going to announce. And that will only be on the Plus, that'll be on the larger phone.
Right here.
And
bigger memory. So you think it'll just be that? Watching phones?
Yeah.
Plus, recapping all the software stuff.
Yep. I don't expect
anything. No laptops or desktops, huh?
Nope. Wow, I don't think so.
For October of some sort.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
I just don't. I think a new phone and a new watch is a pretty big deal for them.
That's true.
I mean, it's their flagship product and their newest product. They don't need to muddle it with new.
Okay.
new desktops and laptops and everything.
Okay.
I'm convincing you.
It could go either way with me. I could see, I remember last year, man, they just dumped it all at once.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's so weird right now. They seem so bad at, like, if it were me, yeah, I would. I hate to do this, but if it were Steve Jobs, it feels like the sort of thing where they would announce a computer this week, and they'd also announce one in October, but they would have announced one in July as well. Like their pacing and keeping Apple front of mind is just terrible nowadays. And like you said, I could see it go either way. I want them to wait till October, just because it's just from a Apple brand perspective, I think that's the right thing to do. But from a how quickly they get this tech out, I seem really slow for some reason. So I don't know.
Okay.
We'll see.
Okay.
But you know what else? What's going on? Blah, 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 blah. You want to know what else is going on that day? Seems just like a bad idea. But Sony's having a press conference as well.
Oh, poor Sony.
I don't understand why they decide they need to go toe-to-toe with Apple. But going toe-to-toe with Apple, they're going to be throwing out their new, slimmer, cooler PlayStation, it sounds like. The PlayStation 4. The PlayStation 4K. The PlayStation 4 Neo. And we'll see from a timing perspective, it makes sense because the PlayStation VR is coming out at the end of October. No, middle of October. So this will put the higher resolution gaming console out there right before the PlayStation VR comes. But from a news cycle perspective, it seems like it's just a really bad idea. And I think it's a classic. Sony still thinks that they don't compete with Apple. You can clearly compete with Apple.
Wow.
What are you doing? Why are you... Even if they were to put it off for like a day or two and just to snag their own news cycle. And TechCrunch, the author who wrote this article, his whole point is like, look, a lot of these, like TechCrunch will probably cover both. But there's a lot of different tech blogs out there that just don't have the resources to cover both. And everybody's going to focus on Apple. They're not going to focus on Sony. And Sony's just going to have a much harder time getting the word out on their new system. But not here, James. We'll do them right. Because we'll probably want to talk about other stuff than just Apple next week. And that'll be something that's going on. So we'll talk about it when that happens. Okay. But
after it happens.
And I will probably be super annoyed by it. This is my prediction. Because I think what's going to happen is they're going to launch this way better system that will make the PlayStation VR seem way more awesome, and it will cost $400 for the new system.
That you don't have.
That's barely a replacement for the one that I already have, that technically, like, I'm going to have the low-end one. I'm just going to be like, this is stupid. Great, I got to buy something else. This is fantastic. Thanks, Sony.
You'll survive. You'll figure it out.
Probably. So, speaking of light field effects, do you know much about the company Lytro?
No, I've heard the name a few times, but don't know much about them.
So they made this camera. We actually made a couple of different cameras, but the light field camera is the one that they got kind of famous for. And it's an interesting look because it's like a long rectangular thing. It's got a giant lens on one hand, on one side, and it doesn't have a focus. Like most high-end cameras, you can adjust it to focus on whatever you want. This one, you just take a picture, and then you go into their little software thing, and that's when you pick the focus afterwards. There's a really good computer file YouTube video where they talk about how it works and what's going on. But effectively, they have, over top the sensor, the actual camera sensor, they have this lens array that allows them to get all sorts of different focuses of the image, and And effectively what you end up with is a bunch of really low resolution vision versions of the image at slightly different offsets and slightly different focuses, which generally speaking would just be completely unintelligible and there wouldn't be any good data from it. But they have these really, really sophisticated algorithms that they use that output that basically take all of that data from all of these different little pictures at set focuses and the known location of where the lenses are, and then rebuilds the entire image based on that. But depending on where you set the focal point, it will actually be able to refocus afterwards, which is a really, really, really cool effect that nobody wants to spend any money on. This is a ridiculously expensive camera for one kind of gimmicky thing, except it's really cool. Like it's from a physics, mathematics, computer science perspective, this is amazing. From a consumer product perspective, it's really kind of pointless. So they've been struggling because they're obviously really intelligent engineers. They've got a lot of talent and some very cool intellectual property, but they got nothing to do with it. And so I think it was last year, they announced a new version of their field effect camera, and it was a monster. It was it's basically a replacement for like traditional movie cameras, your really high-end cameras. Okay. Same basic concept, except it was like, instead of it being like a megapixel picture, it was like a gigapixel picture. I mean, it was ridiculous. But it's specifically designed for film and for using it in film situations. And one of the things that, you know, so you could do like the post effects where you could have multiple focal lengths. You could pick your focal lengths later, which for some directors, that is a valuable thing to have. You're already talking about extraordinarily expensive cameras. So this isn't necessarily outside of their price range of what they're willing to pay for. But one of the cool effects of it is because they're very aware of the focal length and the depth of all sorts of things going on, they can also start to do, at that scale, they were able to do cool effects like editing out backgrounds on the fly.
Interesting.
Right. So it allowed them to build up these 3D maps and stuff. And so like the example of that they had was they'd be like filming in a room, people playing pool, just in a normal room, not like a green screen background. Yeah. And then they would just set the depth and say, delete everything behind here and replace it with this image. And they could completely change the background on the fly. Like it was cool. And which is what we're talking about. This is what Apple is going to try to do with their phone, but using two lens instead of an array of thousands. So this is really cool because now you've got like built-in 3D, like really high-end graphics, or not graphics, but high-end image density and the ability to process a lot of information very quickly. And this all leads to what their current attempt to build a market, which is the Lytro VR camera. And this thing is pretty neat in that everything I just described, it has those features. It can do it can do on-the-fly depth sensing. You can bring out backgrounds and do all sorts of and delete and add stuff on the fly. You can change the field effects. There's field information that's already available, so if you look at different stuff, your eyes can see the different fields. Like it can, if it's doing eye tracking, you can adjust the field of view automatically because all that information is still there, which is a really big deal. They just built it in a 360 array, so you can do the full VR effect, and I guess it's really impressive. And they're at this point, they're still just demo reels that they've been doing, but it sounds like they finally might be kind of falling into their niche, because this is a technology that people are trying to figure out. How do we do this? What's the best way to do it? And the one thing that everybody has always known was, well, if we just had like a million camera sensors, then we could probably figure this out pretty well. But nobody would ever do that. Then Lytro figured out how to do that. So Yeah, I this is the sort of thing that consumers will never have, but right. one of these, but I'm sure a lot of videos will be filmed mm-hmm. in it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And or at least you'll see this type of technology integrated into other tech.
Right. So right. Well, that's very cool.
Pretty cool. Pretty interesting stuff, yeah. It's exciting to watch. And that was your VR update of the week. Slipped it in there.
I was worried. No, it wasn't at all.
Mm. So how's your home automation project going?
Dude, it's
going,
coming awesome. Does that
yeah. work? It's coming awesome. Yeah,
it's coming along. I feel like and is awesome. So the latest thing that I've added is a smart grass watering system. So it's Eden watering, and essentially it's got some solar panels on top of it. And here, let me pull up the app right now, and I'll tell you what's going on. Let's see here. So I download the Eden app. It's connected to the internet because it's smart. And what I can tell you is that right now it's really light out. It's decent humidity, good nutrition, moisture. It's a little low right now. I'm only sitting at 12%. It's not great. It's okay, but I'm pretty low from the ideal, which is pretty crazy. But interestingly, even given that, my next watering is only at 6 a.m., and it's only going to be for 9 minutes.
All right.
Tomorrow. So I'm kind of weird that, which I'm not in charge of it. I have this on some smart watering, rain-skipping thing. And I really would have expected it to be more.
Huh. Some smart water? No.
It's Eden. E-D-Y-N. But, yeah, so it's pretty cool. So the original idea was that I wouldn't have to worry about watering, and if it rained, I wouldn't have to worry about turning anything off and be like, redundant. Just doesn't seem to be watering enough at the moment, which I think is weird. It's weird. Like, I can, if I wanted to, be like, no, I'm going to do it myself. And I can turn it off from smart watering and just say, do an hour every other day, be done with it. So, I don't know. Not sure if I'm in love with it yet, but.
Okay.
Because 9 minutes every day does not seem like enough water, in my opinion.
That doesn't to me either, but. What do I know, man? I have no idea. Well, but you know what I do know about?
What do you know about?
Vaguely, tangentially. Mark Zuckerberg's getting ready to show off his new smart house stuff. I don't know if you remember, a while back, he announced that he was developing his own artificial intelligence.
I do remember that.
And
his own Jarvis.
So he's gearing up to show off his automated watering systems and doors and stuff. And I've been reading this, and they're talking about how, like, I hope to have a demo hopefully next month when I asked about the side project. And he's clearly having excited about the upcoming public event. I got to this point where now I can control the lights, I can control the gates, I can control the temperature, much to the chagrin of my wife, who now cannot control the temperature because it's programmed to only listen to my voice. He said, I'll give her access when I'm done. So it's getting there, and it's starting to be able to do some pretty fun things, and I'm looking forward to being able to show it to the world. Sounds pretty par for the course. We'll see his demo coming up. And he said, it's awesome because I get to interact with all these Facebook engineers who are doing all this awesome AI work and speech recognition and face recognition. I programmed it, so now when I walk up to my gate, I don't have to put in a code or something like that to get in or put in a key. It just sees my face and lets me in. So that is pretty fun. There's some state-of-the-art AI in there, and there's been an awesome chance to work with our engineers at Facebook and really see on a day-to-day experience what they're doing and how far advanced the work is they're doing. That was a weird sentence. It's been a really cool experience so far, and I'm looking forward to showing it off next month, which brings me to the conclusion of it's got to be nice to have billions of dollars to buy high-end technology and to hire some of the best engineers and computer scientists on Earth and just pick their brains about, so I was trying to do this code. Do you think you can help me out? I wonder, I really do wonder, like, because he's clearly a very smart engineer. Like,
yeah.
Nobody's ever doubted that. But I wonder how much of this is of him programming this is like, yeah, so I went and talked to my engineers about facial recognition, and they said, yeah, this is the library that we wrote to do it. Just implement this library and it'll work. And he's like, cool, okay. Which, in all fairness, is what most program, like a lot of, that's very common in programming. You wouldn't want to rewrite that library. But I wonder how much of the actual training / modeling of these artificial intelligences he's doing versus his engineers have done it, and he's just leveraging what they're
getting their help, building. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty funny. pretty cool. I'm excited to see what he builds.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's neat to... It's not off-the-shelf stuff, either.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it's... I mean, I doubt that it'll ever become... I don't think Facebook is going to try to get into the home automation stuff, but it's cool that he's using this as, like, his own project to be like, I want to understand what they're doing. And this is the best way for me to do it, is to try it myself. Try it as my own side
project. $5 says it's super insecure. Unsecured at the time. Right now. Given all the other stuff we've read about it, it's like, you got to be super purposeful about it. Otherwise... No.
That's the one thing he seems pretty good at, like, from an engineering perspective. Like, he seems to be on top of the security stuff. I don't get the feeling that he'd let that go to the wayside, unlike me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm super pumped for... I'm going to be just like Zuckerberg and do some of my own stuff.
Heck yeah. Gotta get that going.
It's going to be awesome. I'll probably have, like, 3 weeks at the beginning of the year to make some good progress.
Yeah.
By the way, so we're having a boy. That's
congratulations!
Thank you. The current my current top choice for names is Yoda.
There we go.
Jessie's not quite convinced yet, so I'm still working on her. But
gotta get her there. Yeah, man.
It'll happen. I'm like, give me a better name.
Give me one better name, and I'll be
that's
over Yoda.
Need. Yeah. Yeah,
that's
cool funny. House though. I'm sure it's gonna be awesome and make me jealous. Mm-hmm. Though my house ain't too bad.
Probably.
Either.
You know what though? There's one thing that Facebook's algorithm or AI isn't very good at. Yeah. So a couple of weeks ago, there was that whole big thing of supposedly Facebook was censoring their trending topics to get rid of conservative news.
Yeah.
And then Facebook said that's absolutely not happening. These are the best people in the world. So they fired them all. And all the editors that they had last week. And they decided to go over to completely algorithmic. Just look for what's trending. Don't have any, like, don't have a synopsis. Just get rid of the potential for bias, which I think is them kind of admitting that, yeah, there was bias, but we're just not gonna say it out loud. But yeah, it definitely didn't improve things.
Yeah.
Turns out their algorithm wasn't quite working properly. And 3 days after Facebook said it would remove all the human editors who curate the trending topic section and replace it with a purely algorithmic system, the company trended a fake news story about Fox News anchor Megyn Kelly. And the mistake seems like it was easily avoidable one. The story on Kelly, which claimed that she had been booted from the conservative leaning Fox News for being a secret Hillary Clinton supporter, had the unmistakable scent of garbage. But without a human to catch the mistake, the story shot to the top of Facebook's trending list, beating out Beyonce's VMA performance and Anthony Weiner's sexting scandal before it was removed at 9:30.
I'm really bummed that that
those
two out. Man, bummer.
I know, right? Yeah. Just, it's great. What's trending? I guess this has been just a relatively easy system to spoof with fake viral headlines. The Kelly story was initially promoted to trending because it met the conditions for acceptance at the time, according to the Facebook review guidelines. However, on re-review, the topic was deemed as inaccurate and removed from trending. So, yeah, it turns out that there's going to be a balance between human interaction and algorithms in the trending section. oh my gosh, that's so funny.
Just makes you realize that Tech Meme has got something figured out.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something there. Well, it's just crazy to me, too, because it's like that was their paper. One of the big selling points of that app was that it had all the other feeds that were curated topics, and it was great. So, I don't know. What happened? What happened, Facebook?
Yeah, who knows? Man. Well, interesting. Well, you know, Facebook is fighting a multi-front war at the moment. So not just with news sites, but with your shared enemy, Snapchat. And this week, man, it was a busy week for the ephemeral wars. I don't want to spend a ton of time on it because we're talking about pictures. Instagram is making some changes. They now, in their explore section, are suggesting people who to follow, which Snapchat has been like almost stubborn against letting you even discover other people. So Instagram's like, all right, one up to us. And then Snapchat shot back that was like, oh, we're creating a web tool where you can make your own custom geo filters, which, to be honest, sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, I don't hate that.
Yeah, where you can, it's like for as little as $5. You can have a filter going for like a party or.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. I mean, if you were to have a birthday party, like I had my 30th birthday party a couple weekends ago, and it would have, like in retrospect, it would have been pretty cool to set a geo filter for the barbecue that we had and just be able to like Snapchat from there, you know, and. I don't know.
Yeah, so that actually sounds kind of awesome. So they came out with that, which is neat. And then I love this. Snapchat then unpublished their Facebook page. What? Ooh. Battle of
drama.
Yeah. Which sounds like in reality it wasn't that big of a deal, where Snapchat, their last update was like in 2013. And they were just like, honestly, we just forgot about it. And then someone discovered it, and we were like, oh, weird. Well, we're not really using it, so let's just shut it down.
Sure. Yeah,
exactly. Like, oh, I don't think so. So Snapchat hates Facebook. And then Instagram released another feature where you can finally zoom in on photos.
Ooh, amazing. That actually... That I couldn't believe it took that long. I was pretty excited about it. That's like the one thing that it's like, why has it been? Why is it so hard to do that?
It's not hard. It's just not a high priority at all. And so those are the ephemeral wars this week. Big drama,
man,
in the photo taking space. And then Apple's gonna change everything yet again.
What? I actually think that it might.
You're so easy to get sucked into it. I love it.
I know. I feel like this whole dual lens thing has been like, there are so many dual lens modules out there for all sorts of different stuff, and nobody's really figured out how to use it, how to make it cool and something that everyone wants to have. And Apple you know, for their flaws as of late, they can still be pretty good at this sort of thing. Like, just coming up with really concrete examples of how to use it that don't step on the toes of other developers, but really give developers the infrastructure and framework to quickly and easily iterate and make something awesome. You know, they're good at that. So I'm optimistic, James.
Okay. I am too, to be honest, for the yes. lens thing. I think they got some smart people working there, and they're not being poached like the driverless cars on that front. They kind of...
Yeah. Yeah, you know, honestly, it's funny. I didn't even think about it, but that's a really good point. I mean, from a building cameras perspective, they are the king of the hills. I mean, they do some amazing work there, and there isn't a lot of... Unless you're going to work for, like, Lytro, or you're already working for Canon or something. But then you're talking about completely different types of cameras for their niche. Cell phone cameras.
Yeah.
There's nobody else.
Yeah.
that's beating them down. So.
Yeah, that's cool. And then finally, I have an app for you to download.
Ooh, what is it?
It
when you're ready.
Is called, oh my gosh, what are you called? Star Chart. It's pretty sweet. It's iOS and Android. So if you've got an Android phone, stop listening and download it. No, I'm kidding. Don't do that. But, Star Chart. And what it does, and I used this the other night, and it was pretty awesome, is you open up the app, and it kind of knows where you are. You give it permission to use your whatever. And then it uses the camera to look at the stars and tell you what it is that you're looking at.
Whoa.
Yeah, and what's sweet about it is, it uses GPS and accurate 3D simulation, I guess. It will not work inside your room because it won't see any stars, which is kind of cool. But you can do different filters where you can say, give me star names, or just give me the names of constellations, or just give me the names of planets, or tell me everything, which is intense. And you can see all the stars that they know about. You can see the Milky Way. It shows you the Earth's crust is.
So what does the $4 version give you?
Is there a $4 version?
Yeah. Buy Star Chart Infinite to get all in-app upgrades to Star Chart, included for free.
Oh. I don't know. I just need a free one.
All right. I'll check it out. I'm not gonna buy it. I'll try to figure out what the in-app purchases
says. There's a meteor showers, comets, satellites. Ooh, that's kind of cool, actually. Extended solar system, enhanced constellations. Oh my! I think my battery just died on my mouse. That's a bummer. That's a real bummer. Enhanced constellations, extended star catalog. Ooh, it's back. And enhanced Messier catalog. I don't even know what that means. Dude, if you buy all those individually, that's crazy expensive.
How much does it cost?
Well,
$4.
It's $3 for the meteor showers, comets, each. $5 for satellites. $3 for extended solar system. $7 for enhanced constellations. Which it looks like the enhanced constellations, they actually draw a picture in the actual stars, so you can better see the shape of it, which looks cool. Ooh, iPad's an option. Interesting. It's a cool app. It's pretty awesome. So,
all right, man. Well, I downloaded it, so I will try it out tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. I recommend it. So, there you go. Star Chart. That's what that's called.
Because as far as I'm concerned, everything looks like the Giant Tipper.
But they'll let you know that if you...
You're wrong.
Yeah, which is super convenient. Right. So there you go. Anything else you want to... We got, like, minutes of spare time. We don't have to. I just...
Yeah, it's so weird.
Thing where you were like, oh, man, I really wish we had talked about this. Nope. All right, cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm happy, man.
Awesome. Hey, good week. So next week, gird yourself. we'll be talking Apple for 2 hours. That's how this works, because we're not so secret Apple fanboys, and we will pick apart every single little detail. Trust us. And, yeah, so there you go. Thank you so much for joining us and listening to episode, I don't know, where are we at? 258. Man, that's...
Holy cow.
And don't forget, you can check out all the show notes and all the links at furloughbros.com/258. And you can get them sent directly to you via email. And finally, this podcast is supported by listeners just like you. And if you would also like to contribute, we would love to let you contribute. You can do that at 4 different levels. We have fanboys, which are awesome. Nerds, which are awesomer. Junkies, which are almost the awesomest. And then mavens, which are the awesomest. And they all have their own levels of rewards. You can read a lot more of it on furloughbros.com. Cool. Well, everybody, Matthew has to go catch a movie. So we're going to let him go do that. He's got to go celebrate some... what is it? Gene Wilder. His life. His comedy. His hilariousness. Enjoy it. So, I am James Furlough. My fizzy lifted brother is Matthew Furlough. And so we will talk next time. Thank you.